This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Terry Schlosser and Matthew Johns from SUSE.
Thank you for having us, Ian. I am Terry Schlosser. I head up product technical and solution marketing for SUSE. So I cover our whole portfolio from a marketing and awareness perspective.
Hello, Ian. My name's Matthew Johns. I'm the product marketing manager for SUSE OpenStack Cloud, and I also look after our cloud service provider portfolio as well.
We're here at OpenStack Summit. First thing we discovered was it's no longer going to be OpenStack Summit going forward. It's going to be Open Infrastructure. Does that change things?
It changes things from the perspective of opening up the summit to bring in other communities. We're already integrating with OpenStack, but it enables further engagement and collaboration at the summit itself, which I think is really good. I think it will help to really meet what customers, people that are using OpenStack, need. They need these extra integrations to really deliver the full infrastructure for their internal customers. Bringing all of those communities together in one location to do that collaboration is really good. They also announced that they're bringing the PTG back to be here, which I also think is a really good thing.
I'd absolutely agree with Terry.
When we look at this a little closer, we've had software defined for a long time. And in some areas it's worked, commodity hardware inside cloud environments. In other areas it hasn't worked, mainly because there was not a huge take up of some types of hardware, but also the cost of generating that hardware meant that these people didn't have open source drivers or didn't want to play. How do we widen the engagement so that we seamlessly move from a software-defined conversation into an open infrastructure conversation and it doesn't impact customers having to change architecture, drivers, or anything else?
That's an interesting question, because when I look at the way that we approach infrastructure solutions for our customers, we have our software-defined infrastructure with our application delivery approach, and I view that as an open infrastructure approach. Everything we do is open and built using open source software, whether they're using commodity hardware or not. Yes, it may change some of those things, but those challenges would be there whether we were doing open infrastructure or software-defined infrastructure, whatever you want to call it, I think.
But what does it mean for customers if we think about internally in their data center? They struggle to move workloads sometimes between different parts of their infrastructure. If we're going to talk multi-cloud and we're going to be seamless, surely open infrastructure, if it plays out as we hope it will, removes that massive barrier to being able to go from one set of hardware to another to another.
Yes, I totally agree with that statement. But a lot of that is not necessarily. You need a software-defined infrastructure. You need the capability to abstract that hardware. You can use whatever you have and make sure that the workloads are there. But for real mixed cloud, and I think that this is really what's changed. People have talked about hybrid cloud and mixed cloud for a long time, but doing it with VMs was never going to be successful because Amazon's hypervisor strategy is different than your internal private strategy, which is different than Microsoft Azure's hypervisor strategy. Having a single VM that can really move across is really difficult. Could it be done? Yes, but it's very difficult. And that's where building a container infrastructure does allow a lot more movement with less friction, if you want to call it as such. So when we look at the open infrastructure and a software-defined infrastructure, and we expand that up to the application delivery space, building out on Kubernetes, we also deliver Cloud Foundry capability. Our Cloud Foundry capability lets customers build containers and use Kubernetes. They can use our Kubernetes in their data center. They can use Amazon's Kubernetes. They can use Azure's Kubernetes. And then they really have the capability for moving workloads around because it's at the container level.
Do we need open infrastructure? I mean, if we look at hypervisors, if we look at operating systems, our challenge has always been those drives that have abstracted the physical layer away from the logical layer. If we're going to go to containers and we're going to talk about the fact we can throw Kubernetes on any of those platforms, why are we even talking about the need for open infrastructure and the need to go and play yet again in that hardware interface?
You still need the flexibility. One of the things you need to think about is they call it cloud-native applications. Well, internally, if you're going to be building cloud-native applications and you want to do it on your own hardware, you need a flexible cloud infrastructure to do that on. From our perspective, that is an open infrastructure. That's a software-defined infrastructure that provides that infrastructure as a service for those developers to build those cloud-native applications.
So this is more about a developer play and their ability to write than it is about an end user play. But surely, rather than developers, we should be telling developers, just assume the infrastructure is there. We've done that at the network layer for the last 20, 30 years, from IPX to TCP/IP, showing my age here, from the introduction of Bluetooth to the introduction of mobile. But if we make it just there, that only leaves us the operators that we have to talk about, the people who are running the physical infrastructure. Why should that concern end-user companies?
When you say end-user companies, you mean the people developing the applications or the consumers of the applications?
For people developing the applications, if we just tell them to assume it's there, they'll assume it's there.
But somebody inside the company still has to ensure that that infrastructure is there.
If we're going to run OpenStack as the operating system, does it not still then have the same problems that operating systems have had or hypervisor layers have had? Because in effect, it is our hypervisor.
It's interesting that you called it a hypervisor. It sort of is. You are using it to abstract. It's just as opposed to abstracting the hardware like the virtualization, you're abstracting the compute and the storage. Does it have the same issues? I don't think so. For the end user, if they're building with containers and you are deploying Kubernetes clusters inside of your OpenStack environment, then you're still able to provide the capabilities that your end users need. You have the capability to deploy those Kubernetes clusters when those folks need them and then give the resources back. So you still have the flexible infrastructure. I'm not sure I have a good answer for you.
Everyone's going to have to become their own cloud service provider, and internal IT teams remain relevant that way by building those OpenStack environments with Kubernetes on top, which then allows them to extend onto any platform that supports it. So currently, you know, customers that use the SUSE platforms can operate very well through the integration that we've built with Amazon Container Services and Azure Container Services and Google coming soon as well. It's, you know, something that is already partially a reality, and as the use of Kubernetes and Cloud Foundry and other things like that increase, we'll see people extending that, and suddenly hybrid becomes that reality that it's always promised to be, but very few companies have ever managed to actually build something that works as a true hybrid environment.
I also think the difference between the VM, between the hypervisor and this perspective, is that the containers, we do have the OCI compliance, and that is allowing people to move containers between the different areas, versus with the hypervisors, they actually have different technologies. And so I think that difference is key.
How do we make this acceptable to a lot of people? We've got multiple constituencies here. You mentioned there, Matthew, people becoming their own cloud providers. That's a song we've been singing for 5 to 6 years. When we first started singing it, it was to help IT become relevant to the business units who were running out and buying cloud services. Everybody saw that as IT just becoming yet another bottleneck. We have to, first of all, sell that in such a way that IT is not the bottleneck. Secondly, with that, is there not then a problem for developers? Because if we're saying to developers, just assume it's there, and it doesn't matter whether it sits on OpenStack or if it sits on Amazon or it sits on who knows what cloud, because Kubernetes will have made that abstraction. Once again, we come back to, if you're a developer, surely the only thing you care about is that your end target is it's going to be in a container managed by Kubernetes.
From a developer perspective, yes, but there's still the internal IT organization that's managing the infrastructure and where the applications are being deployed to optimize resource utilization and caring about those, the expenses around those things. So I still think that there are people that need to understand the infrastructure because they are delivering it so that the developers really can not concern themselves with it. It's interesting that you say that because one of the things that we've seen change in the last 5 years from our customers coming to us. 5 years ago, IT was coming to us saying, we need to build a private cloud, we need infrastructure as a service, and they didn't know what applications were going to run there. They just knew that they needed that. And what we hear now is totally different. What we hear now is, I have developers coming to me, they're building these applications, they want to build cloud-native applications and take advantage of microservices, and they can't do that unless I have a cloud. I need to build a cloud to meet this requirement coming to me, as opposed to, as you were saying before, I need to do something, infrastructure as a service, I've been told that it's important. Now they really have real use cases coming in, driving it. We've seen that change.
That disaggregation at the hardware layer is going to be a challenge, surely. We've gutted the server and storage market in the last 5 years. But we're now moving well beyond that into much more specialized environments. We have accelerators being the key if we want to do artificial intelligence and machine learning. We're talking about edge computing, which can be any device you've got. how do we ensure that if we're going to say open infrastructure, it is broad enough to cover where the business is going rather than just continue with that same constituency that we've technically done without just wrapping it in another ribbon?
It's interesting that you say that because we have a product called SUSE Manager for retail and also our SUSE Linux Enterprise for point of service systems, which when you take a step back and you think about the retail industry and they have all these distributed stores, they have all of their point of service systems that oftentimes there is not good network connection. They're gathering the data, they're processing it in the endpoint, and then they're bringing it back in, which is very much what we're talking about when we talk about edge devices. Well, we've been doing this for a long time with SUSE Manager, managing those devices through an open infrastructure. SUSE Manager is also an open source technology, managing and making sure that those end devices are running the right level of Linux, understanding if they're out of compliance, making sure that they have the latest security patches, and really managing that infrastructure. We have already done some of that in some specific use cases, but I think taking that learning and understanding how we extend that out to other IoT devices. We've also been doing a lot of work with hardware vendors themselves, the folks creating those devices, and having them leverage our SUSE Linux Enterprise. We have a very modular approach to what we delivered with SLE 15. We call it our multimodal operating system so that customers can take it. It's very modular. You can just put the pieces you need together just to run, make it very small so it can run on those IoT devices, or use the full set of packages to run your back-end systems. So they have the capability then to only have to manage one Linux distribution that they can use from the edge to the core to the cloud.
How many customers are taking advantage of that? They often don't know what IoT they've got. We know that the vast majority of IoT out there ends up within 3 to 4 years of being a completely orphaned operating system. These vendors go out of business faster than you can think. Very little of it has any security built in. Very little of it gets any driver update. So when you talk to your enterprise customers, are they beginning to reassess their IoT strategy in terms of, can we push SUSE down to those devices? Can we take better control at that edge, and therefore we're working with one operating system we can secure, we can understand, we can manage through a single management interface? Or are they just struggling to get any handle at all on what's going on?
We see this a large breadth. We have some customers that have things out there that have been out there for 15 years. They're running SLE, something really old, and we're still supporting them because it still works. We have a lot of customers who have IoT devices who have no idea what operating system is in there because it's embedded, and they don't care because it works. I was talking to our Americas CTO who had just met with a retail customer in the U.S., and they were talking about how they are using sensors to understand when the plants need to be watered in their stores and how we can help them to manage that infrastructure. So I think there are customers at all stages, and we are working with them to understand where they're at and how we can help them get there. Security is always an issue. The good thing about using a SLES-based operating system is you do get some level of security with that. We make sure that it's always up and has been tested, and we're always on top of the security. Anything coming from that perspective, we make sure our customers have the latest updates, and that if there is something going on from a security perspective, that we have fixes to them as quickly as possible. And again, this is where SUSE Manager comes in, because it can go out, check all of your devices, understand where they are, identify which ones need to be updated, and then automatically update them.
Nick Barsett threw a huge curveball from stage when he said, we want to reduce the time it takes to push out a new version of OpenStack. That was the first start of it. He then smacks it out of the court when he turns around and says, who cares how many different versions you have? We can sort this out. Maybe I've been around IT management way too long, but trying to run 3 or 4 versions of operating systems across my enterprise infrastructure would turn anybody to drink.
Yes.
How do we increase that cadence of delivery of OpenStack and components without leaving customers thinking they're in a constant update cycle, and without weakening security and patchings? Because we all want to get to better CI/CD, and if we look at platform as a service, we've kind of got there with that. But now we're poking down at a much lower level, a level that's always been problematic. Can we get there? Can you do that with your customers?
Our customers don't want that. Actually, one of the things that we hear from customers is, could we get a longer support cycle? They don't want to change every 3 months. So it was interesting when he said that, because I was thinking, that is not what we're hearing from our customers. We used to deliver every time there was an OpenStack release, every 6 months, we would have a new release of our OpenStack. But we heard from customers, and really OpenStack got to a maturity level, that in that next release, there were nice fixes and there were nice things, but they weren't required. We then moved to a year delivery cycle. At the time, we had a 2-year support cycle. Our customers asked for more, so we're now at a 3-year support cycle, and we'll go longer if customers want it. We also worked on things like fast forward. Our customers who have SUSE OpenStack Cloud 6 could move to SUSE OpenStack Cloud 8 and skip 7. Our customers, our enterprise customers, are telling us we don't want to move every 6 months. So this idea that they would want to move every 3 months is not realistic. That is not what we're hearing. When you talk about other projects like a Kubernetes or a Cloud Foundry that are less mature, it's really important that you're delivering those new features and functions because they're critical. You need that to be able to do something that you need to be able to do. OpenStack, we're on Rocky. We're on Stein. We're getting ready for Train. We are getting close to 20 releases in. It's a pretty mature and stable set of features and functions that customers have that allow them to deliver a software-defined infrastructure.
And there surely is the twist in the tail of all of this. Because if we think about a software-defined infrastructure, an open infrastructure, we have drivers to deal with. If we're talking about 70,000 code changes every single year inside OpenStack, customers are going to find themselves with new hardware coming in, and it doesn't matter whether that's an enterprise or whether that's a cloud operator. This is going to happen. They're going to want to bring those drivers, those parts of open infrastructure in. So how do we begin to separate out those drivers from OpenStack? Because, again, maybe it's my age, but this smells like the whole old operating system problem that we've struggled with for decades.
I think that's a problem that we still need to sort out. The industry knows it's not perfect. We still have so much work to do, but we've made so much progress towards this. If everybody works together, we can find the solution, particularly in the open source world. The amount of collaboration you're seeing on the projects that have been announced at the keynotes this week, you see all the major players in the industry working together to find those solutions. That collaboration can only increase and will eventually lead to not quite utopia. We will never get to utopia, but we'll get a little bit closer.
But there's two sides again to that collaboration. There's the open source community who may not have access to the drivers. And let's be clear, we're seeing people lock down very tightly what you can do with their source code now to play with their devices. And then we have the people running the operating systems. Those drivers have to be surfaced in order to connect to the hardware. If the hardware vendors don't necessarily want to jump in and play with this, how do we find that match?
But we've been doing that forever. We've been delivering SUSE Linux Enterprise for over 20 years, and we get the drivers out there. We work very closely with the hardware vendors to make sure that we're getting the drivers out there to support what's coming.
But how do we backport those drivers to older versions? Because that's always been one of our challenges.
I still think that's a challenge. From an operating system perspective, we do it. SUSE Linux Enterprise support lifecycle is 13 years. So we're doing it. We're backporting. But you don't have to do too much backporting from the perspective of people that are running a 10-year-old Linux are doing it on a 10-year-old piece of hardware. They're not trying to take that version of Linux and put it on something brand new.
What about downtime? Because as we start to upgrade those older versions, and we all knew that we lived in a world then where you took a server down, took it offline, backed it up, put the new version of the operating system on, ate your fingers down to the nails, went all the way down to your wrists sometimes, and hoped that it would come back up when you turned it back on again. We've moved to a world with the latest versions where we don't have downtime. When you look at your customer base, how many roughly of your customers percentage-wise have moved to the point where they can do upgrades seamlessly without having to drop servers? How many are still struggling? And if you look at the wider OpenStack industry, how many customers overall do you think out there have still not got to that point of smooth upgrade?
Well, I still think upgrading is going to be something that is a challenge. We do have seamless upgrades currently from the perspective that all of the running VMs that OpenStack is managing can stay up, but you will have some downtime in the control plane. Great segue into what's coming in Cloud 9 and Cloud 10. Working on Airship, the project that was just announced, which is the containerized control plane. As part of our SUSE OpenStack Cloud 9 release that we're planning for the first half of next year, we will have a tech preview of Airship there, of a containerized control plane. We're doing a tech preview because the project was just announced and we are very engaged in the project, but we want to make sure it's enterprise ready before we're delivering it in SUSE OpenStack Cloud 10 in 2020. It's part of our plan to get to a containerized control plane, which will help significantly with that downtime. But we've already really have it from the running VM application inside of OpenStack. It's the control plane that there is still some downtime, but we're working on it. And that's exactly why we announced Project Airship this week.
If we look forward 18 months, it's a lifetime in this industry, isn't it? It's three releases. If Nick Barsett gets his way, it's six releases. But if we look forward those 18 months, what's going to change? What do you think OpenStack's going to look like in that time?
That's a good question. What I would like to see are the four projects that they announced here. I would like to see those move from incubation into production, see some really good stuff come out of those. The work on Starling and the 5G, I think, is really incredible stuff, and I would love to see where that goes and really enables the telco community to even further take advantage of OpenStack. Containerized control plane will help a lot with the downtime and the upgrade concerns that people have. I would like to see some new projects. I think more integration and understanding on how we leverage other community projects that are going on around OpenStack. I would love to see more integration there and more commitment and engagement from those communities at the summit, what will be the Open Infrastructure Summit. And I would like to see that the community continues maybe not to grow, but to sustain itself, because I think there is a lot of engagement right now. And if we can keep that engagement, then I think we'll see a lot of new things coming down the road.
We may well see some more of the legacy vendors that haven't typically played so well with OpenStack getting involved now that it's not just OpenStack. There's been a huge number of people who have. IBM have been in the OpenStack world for a long time, and there are many people who are surprised when they learn about how deep IBM go into open source, because everyone views them as the big proprietary, big blue, as they were always called. So we'll see more of that sort of thing, and the containerized control plane, as Terry's. Yeah, that just represents so much opportunity for people to, again, approach that utopian dream of no downtime when you're upgrading, easily deploy HA environments. It's an exciting time. 18 months' time, who knows where we'll be. We'll be back in Europe, getting ready to come back to Europe for OpenStack again. I'll be a little bit greyer, but OpenStack will have no doubt gone forward quite a lot at that point.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see where the AI and machine learning workloads take it. There will be a lot of demand from the application layer into the OpenStack community that is geared around HPC feeding up into those applications. So I think that will be an interesting space. It's something that we've seen customers starting to ask about. I think that may also play into some of the things we see.
I think part of that will depend upon how quickly people like NVIDIA and the other people in that machine learning space who are critical adopt open infrastructure, or how we find an accommodation with them.
Yes. In fact, we were at supercomputing this week. We announced OpenACC with them. So yeah, lots of good stuff going on in that area.
Terry and Matthew, thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Appreciate your time.